Hey, fellow book lovers, welcome back to the Bibliovert podcast. My name is Jacqueline, and I'm here with my best friend, Allie, and we love reading and talking about books. The beginning of every episode is always spoiler-free, but then we will be getting into spoilers and our thoughts on the book. This week, we are going to be talking about Slaying the Vampire Conqueror by Krissa Broadbent. This is technically set in the same world as the Serpent in the Wings of Night series. I'm assuming they're going to be intertwined eventually, but it's kind of its own standalone. So, let's get into it. Allie, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this one.
Oh, for some reason, I've been thinking you hated it.
No.
Oh, good.
It did take me a long time to get through it, but not because of the book, simply because I was thinking about 10,000 other things while I was reading it. Mm-hmm. I think I liked this one more than Six Scorched Roses, which I think I enjoyed. I don't remember much of it.
Yeah.
But I do think potentially less than Serpent in the Wings of Night.
Okay.
Have I finished Ashes and the Star-Cursed King? No. So, can I rank that one? I cannot.
Yeah.
So, we know what happened to me with Bridge Kingdom.
Yes.
Where I thought, I would think I was overhyped on Bridge Kingdom, and then I think after reading this one, I think I've just discovered that I am not that this archetype of, like, infiltrating assassin falls in love with the person that they're supposed to be assassinating is potentially not for me.
Interesting.
Because I need the person to get with the program. Like, I haven't lived through their decades of being brainwashed and tortured at the hand of the person that has assigned them to do the assassinating.
Right.
And so I am very quick to jump sides.
Interesting.
And be like, I am clearly on the team of the love interest. And therefore, you need to get with the program. I experienced very similar emotions to this one as I did in Bridge Kingdom.
When you texted me and you were like, is this gonna hurt? And
I was
yes, but also, like, I feel like it resolves fairly quickly in this one.
I was like, oh, how badly is this gonna cause? Because it was triggering my anxiety.
Well, yeah. Understandably so.
TLDR. I enjoyed it. Had a good time.
Good.
Liked it.
This one is for the plot girlies. Is what I, like, it is just, like, one plot point to another. There is, especially on her end, there's, I wouldn't necessarily say, like, character development. There is, but more in the sense of, like, the becoming aware of the lies that have been told to you your entire life.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of character development. So, like, I just, it's a fast-paced, you know, kind of like one thing after another kind of book. I really, really loved it. I've actually been thinking a lot about why, because I do, I love Bridge Kingdom. It's I really enjoy the series, or the duology. I have not read the second duology. But I was kind of wondering why I was less frustrated with Selena in this book than I was with Lara at times in Bridge Kingdom, and I think I finally figured out why, and we can talk about it once we get into spoilers. So, like, I think that this one may have been done a little bit better, just in terms of, like, what I prefer personally. Still love Bridge Kingdom. Still think it's great. But I also think the lore and the, like, world building and the magic aspects of this book were so fun. The threads and how that works and how she was blind but she could still see things and the blood magic and all that kind of, I just thought that that was, like, a really rich, lush part of the book that I just thoroughly enjoyed. Yeah. So anyway, I love this book.
Did you enjoy it the second time reading it?
I did. So I listened to the audiobook this time. And I think that I maybe did not have quite as much fun listening to the audiobook as I did reading it, but it's not I'm not going to say it's the audiobook narrator's fault. They did a wonderful job, but I think there were times that I noticed that parts that I would have put an emphasis on or put an inflection with were opposite. And so I think I just had more fun kind of doing that myself while reading. Yeah. And so anyway, but I wasn't disappointed, which is good. So, and I've been in a horrific book slump. This is the first book I've read in 6 weeks. So
I'm killing it.
18 books behind schedule now.
You're doing great.
But I have to say, this cover,
so much better than the other one.
So much better. The one where it's people drawn on it. I don't love this one. Is it has the eye on the cover and all the daggers and stuff.
It's more graphic. You've got
stunning.
Your little motifs and stuff.
Right.
I also just did not picture Atreus guy on the cover of the people one. So it's helpful that I didn't have to look at that face while I was reading.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that statement.
Yeah.
So, I'm really glad you liked it because I've been a bit nervy.
No, I did.
Okay, good. That makes me... I also like the fact... I feel like it's a perfect length. You know,
Yeah.
And it's a standalone. So let's see. It is... Here we go. 412 pages. It just, you get everything you need, you know? I never felt like it was slow, that I wasn't I feel like we're just moving way too quickly and I have no idea what's going on, and that felt really important. It was just kind of a perfect little, everything that I like in a standalone, so.
Yeah.
Thought it was a lot of fun.
I also completely forgot almost everything that happened in Serpent in the Wings of Night.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond, overarching themes.
Hunger Games world, with vampires.
Pretty much, yeah. And, the houses. But that was all I could remember about it.
Right.
And it did not negatively impact my reading experience in this. It did make me think, you know what? I probably need to reread the first one before I continue with the second one. But it didn't negatively impact... this could be read as a standalone.
Right. And, 100%. I also, technically... Six Scorched Roses goes in between Serpent in the Wings of Night and the Ashes and the Star-Cursed King.
Right.
And I think we see those characters in the Ashes and the Star-Cursed King. Mm-hmm. So if you don't read it, I think you're fine. You might just kind of be like, oh, I wonder what their story is. Of course, I did not finish Ashes either, but I want to. So, that's what's made me wonder if we'll see Selena and Atreus in the rest of the Crowns of Nyaxia series.
I think we will.
I'm assuming we will.
I think it even says it.
They might just stay in Galeas or Galeas or whatever their little country's called. They might not sail back.
They have their happy ending with each other. They still have tons to accomplish in the Crowns of Nyaxia world. They will be making a very important appearance later in the series.
Okay, well, there you go. We didn't get to that part in the audiobook. Might be. They are important. You might want to read it.
Author's notes exist.
Ah! You should read them. yeah. Well, you want to get into spoilers?
Let's do it.
All right. Spoiler warning. Go read this book. It's great. I think you'll have a good old time reading it. But with that, we are going to be talking about spoilers. First thing I would like to say is I would be that girl who would just be I'm on his side. I mean, coming in and, like, conquering another, not a good thing. Like, right. we don't stand for that. But, like, but he tries not to harm the human populace.
Right.
Therefore, he seems pretty great. So let's fall in love with him.
Right. Not to get into deep discussions about colonialization.
Right.
But, like, to an extent, they were being oppressed.
Yeah. I mean, this is, like, a best-case scenario moment. Like, Atreus is just... He's just a girl trying to get rid of his little blood curse.
Right. Like, his hands are tied.
Totally. He's like, I have to conquer this land. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, but you do it so nicely.
Yeah.
I was cracking up about that this entire book, of just being like, literally bare minimum. And yet I'd be like, you want me to be your girlfriend? Please say yes. You want me to be your queen? Definitely yes.
So one of the things that I was like, this is a little bit of a plot hole, but I'm just gonna ignore it.
La la la.
She allows herself to be captured, so that she can become the seer. And then maybe like a week later, is like, but I can also help in battle. Here, let me prove it to you. Fights him. And nobody looks. Nobody looks around and is like,
this is weird. Our last,
you tried to hit me with a candlestick. Like,
We actually found this mutilated corpse, and we've been wondering who did it. Maybe it was you.
Concept. Yeah. Have you seen? Sorry, I'm pivoting.
Pivot.
Have you seen the Dark Knight Rises trilogy?
Mm-hmm. It's been a long time, though.
I can't remember which one of the three it is, but there's at one point where Batman puts on a mask or something, and he's seeing in the dark or something, and he's like, it might be Dark Knight Rises, because it might be the moment when I'm picturing him, like, seeing the skyscraper, like, up in the skyscraper with, holding the hostages, and they're doing, like, the... They're using, or like when they're using satellite images to try and locate the Joker. One of the, that's how I picture her vision with the threads.
Oh, interesting.
And it's, if I'm remembering correctly, it's in grayscale, which is not true.
Right.
To
what she can see.
What she can actually see.
Yeah.
So it was very confusing when she would be like, I saw him blush. I'm like, you did?
I have a hard time noticing when someone blushes.
Right.
I gotta say, I just pictured that she pretty much had eyesight. Like, yeah. it is what it is. Like, kind of thing, if I'm gonna be completely honest.
But it was nice to realize at the end that her eyes weren't actually removed.
Which is what I thought the whole
mutilated,
time.
Yes, but not removed.
Right. I think it was interesting how, like, she could literally see him blush, but then she would, and I'm not trying to, like, discredit her or anything here, but then she would talk about how she, like, missed being able to see the ocean and, like, what was so beautiful. And I was like, so it was a really interesting, like, division between, like, appreciating beauty, but then also being able to see things. And I was like, I had a very hard time finding the distinction between what she could and could not.
Yeah.
See, I think is probably the best way to put it. But again, I was listening to it on audiobook while I was doing other things, so there's, like, a really good chance that I just missed stuff.
No, so. I was looking at the words and still couldn't. Because, like, she could, like, see through rock and stuff, but you're right.
You know, she misses, but then she was like, I miss my painting of, like, the ocean, how beautiful. I think it may have been more, like, what was tangibly connected to her eyeballs. Like, the sight that was a physical sight is, like, what was the connection of being missed? Like,
maybe
being able to open your eyes and see it. But, again, I kind of felt like I would get lost occasionally in that nuance, but also it certainly didn't ruin anything for me.
Yeah, it didn't detract.
No. I'm not gonna lie, I kind of, you brought this up of how it was kind of a plot hole, and I agree. I kind of like the simplicity of how she, like, just set herself up to be found. So I was like, I'm kind of not mad about this.
I'm glad we didn't waste a ton of time on that.
Right. You know, and it wasn't this, like, huge, elaborate scheme. It was just
trials take that one out and make myself obvious.
Right. I will say this, if I can find it quickly. I loved the conversation between the old seer and her. Like, right before she killed her. She let out a vicious laugh. Probably not funny how I spent my entire life peering into the future and never thought that my end would come at the hands of one of you effing cultists. Well, I'm not one to fight fate, but I will fight you. I don't know why. I think I was, like, doing laundry, and I was like, obviously, I'm Team Selena here. Like, I love her. Right. She's a great character. But, like, what an iconic, like, last line to go out with, you know? Just thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then when she said, you would, so she asked him, why are you helping him? And she scoffed, you would think a child of your goddess would understand that the world looks awfully different depending on where you stand, or maybe they took your eyes so you wouldn't see that. And I was like, I will say one thing that never, ever, ever got discussed in this book was how he killed one of her sisters, like, during the, like, first invasion.
Oh, yeah. Or how he saw her.
So
he looked at her, and she chose not to kill him. And we never got, I didn't even think about it until right now, we never got a moment, like, where he was like, I knew it was you.
I've known,
that's what I kept waiting for. Right, was him to be like, I know what you're doing. Like, I understand. Especially after the first, quote unquote, betrayal of, like, she altered her vision enough to get him in trouble. I expected him to come back and be like, yeah, no, I knew. Yes. I was aware the whole time that you would be lying.
So this is what
I needed him to be. This was another one of those, like, he's all powerful. Nothing could defeat him. And then something would defeat him quickly. And I'm like, my guy.
Okay, so I think this is, we'll just get to it. This is what I think did not bother me about this book that did bother me about Bridge Kingdom. Is because even though you can say she betrayed him. But also, she didn't owe him anything at the time. Like, she really was intending to take him out, and she set him up for failure. She then saved all their booties. But, like, you know, so it wasn't one of those, they decide that they were going to be together, and then she betrays him. Her betrayal came at the, I'm trying to save you, and, like, he just didn't know it. You know, like, she was saying she was going to offer up a sacrifice, but she was really planning on saving his life. I mean, she should have told him. Let's just, like, call it what it is. She should have just told him. But it, spoiler for Bridge Kingdom, it wasn't like she wrote the letter and then tried to, like, take it back and then couldn't because one had already been sent out. It wasn't like she knew that she shouldn't do something and she did it anyway. Like, I remember being nervous about this the first time I read it. I was so nervous that she was going to tell the site mother about the citizens on that one island. And then she was going to be the reason that they all died. And I'm so grateful that, like, that did not happen. So, like, I do not think she willingly betrayed him while they were together. She willingly withheld information that probably would have been helpful for him to know. And I think in that instance, I would have been happy if he's like, I've known the whole time.
Yeah. Good.
Like, thanks for trying to trick me. I think I would have liked that a little bit more. But I did not feel like there was anything that I was like, oh, you really messed up and you, like, can't take it back and you betrayed him and that's going to be a hard thing to get over. It was the icky feeling of, like, he feels like you've betrayed him, but, like, it's going to work out because you're actually saving his life and you also got his blood curse removed. And you killed someone who is being a tyrant all at the same time. So I think that's why I liked the way that it played out a little bit better than I did in French Kingdom.
I also enjoyed that Selena had a specific job and a specific purpose that she was there to serve and do versus Lara, that her purpose was to, like, be the wife, you know? Not to say that that's not a valid purpose, and definitely not to say that Danielle Edginson didn't write Lara as a dynamic, interesting, capable, powerful character. But, like, there was an element in Bridge Kingdom where Lara had to, like, earn activities to do, like, earn the freedom. Because there was a period where she was just expected to, like, stay in the house and hang out, you know? And this one was from the get-go of, this is the job that you're serving. Mm-hmm. It's an exchange of services.
Right.
Rather than entering into that marriage contract kind of thing.
Yes.
And I think that added a little bit more action to this one right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And it added easier ways. Like, that's how they're connecting, you know? Mm-hmm. Especially once that service turns into her helping him bear his curse a little bit more.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's much more emotional. It's much more connective. They're spending a lot more time together. I thought that progression was more enjoyable.
I would agree with that. I think that that's a really, really interesting insight of the, like, depending on kind of what the nature of the relationship is like, obviously, in Bridge Kingdom, it's an arranged marriage. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm not saying that there's kind of this, you know, like, emotional connection from right off the bat. But I do think that anytime marriage is involved, the betrayal feels bigger. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, we were married kind of thing. Even if it is just one that's, like, in name only kind of thing and it is arranged. So, I agree. I like the fact that there was not, like, that extra added weight to this one that, you know, she was captured, but also willingly, like, she set up her own capture. It was in a position where she shouldn't have control, but she was also in control the entire time. And so I think, like, that balance just, it felt a lot better for me. And I really liked the way that kind of, that, like, tenderness came about, you know, with her helping with his curse and kind of, like, almost that soft side. And I thought that that was a really, I enjoyed that added dynamic that they were equal partners in, like, battle and that kind of stuff. But then there was, like, this softer, tenderer side. And he was very protective, but also very,
I liked their dynamic. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because on the one side of arranged marriages, that's the appeal of that. And I can appreciate that as the differentiator between these two books and why a person might like one over the other. With the arranged marriage dynamic, you get the reader and the characters both having the push and pull of, is it real? Is it not real? Are these feelings there? Are they not there? That's the appeal of that trope versus this scenario where emotional connection is never on the table. It's never anticipated. So the reader and the characters are not doubting the validity of its existence. They're just growing in the intensity of it. And you never have the communication. You never have the miscommunication between them of, like, it's fake for them, but it's real for me, but it's real for me, but it's fake for them. You never get that. And because we've removed that, I feel like you have a lot more space for other conversations, other places for them to grow naturally, because there's that lack of insecurity in doubting what the other person is, may or may not be presenting as a front. It's just face value. And I think that that takes a level of speculation out for the reader so you can settle into the story a little bit more.
I agree.
And not wait for the one to trip the other one up.
100% agree. And like, that's a, I love fake dating. I love
marriage
trips, like eat them up. But I think it was just very refreshing that it felt like their relationship just only progressed and there was never like setbacks and there wasn't even really a third act breakup. There wasn't, you know, anything like, again, there's that tension of the betrayal potential. And again, because I had already read it and I knew what was going to happen, I felt like I got to enjoy it a lot more this time. Because I wasn't sitting there absolutely sweating like I was the first time. And like, sure. Did it maybe work out a little too simply that like he never got mad or had any questions at all? You know, that he like never said like, hey, so you did sabotage me the first time. You know, like that kind of stuff. Like, because he did lose people. But like, I think that the trust was there and the trust was never broken. I also felt like one thing that Carissa could have done, and I'm glad that she didn't, was present the assumption from Atreus' side that Naru was a lover instead of a brother. Mm-hmm. And instead he was just like, that's your brother. He looks like you. So there was never that like jealousy or the assumption of like, oh, that's just her, you know, her former lover. And, you know, I'm pulling back or pulling away or going to be more distant because of it. We never saw that either. And I really liked that aspect as well.
I appreciate that Atreus is very face value. There's mm-hmm. not... I also appreciate that his face value is inherently has breadth and depth instead of him being two-dimensional. I like that he, the conversations that we have with him, the actions that he does, the insight that we get into the visions that she has about him mm-hmm. creates this 3D character. And there's nothing shocking necessarily about him. He's exactly what you sign up for. And I think right. that is the correct writing choice for a standalone. When you've got multiple books that you're trying to show hills and valleys of characters and how they grow over time cyclically, like Selena is a great example of a three-dimensional character that experiences peaks and low points where they're going up and down and they're going through multiple different character development pieces. Atreus is consistent across the board and mm-hmm. it makes it easy for the readers to connect to him. It makes it easier for Selena to connect to him. And like in moments like that, where it could, you could have that opportunity to insert new flaws and create tension or drive the relationship farther apart so that you have another opportunity to come together. It's a pretty linear progression mm-hmm. for them. And it makes a standalone that much easier to enjoy because you're not worried about what's coming around the next corner mm-hmm. yeah. of, oh, I have to anticipate this third act breakup or this cliffhanger right. that's going to lead me into the next book and keep me interested, that type of thing.
I appreciated too that like I felt like he was a very good balance, and maybe it was because like she didn't mind it. But it was a good balance between he never underestimated what she was able to do, but he was also still protective at the same time. So it wasn't mm-hmm. like, you're this, you know, damsel in distress. I mean, like, she kind of put that front up in order to get in, but then the second that she showed how she was able to fight, he was like, all right, well, then, you know, come fight for me kind of thing. And then, you know, like, they kind of worked well together. They protected each other in the battle. But, like, it was like a sweet thing rather than kind of a not trusting your abilities kind of thing. Or like, you know, what he needed was to feel like she was safe and protected. Mm-hmm. So I kind of liked that dynamic as well. He never like stifled her. He may not have been happy with like, for example, when I'm trying to remember how the audiobook pronounced it. And I also don't remember how it was written because I didn't physically read at this time, but the Slobecs, is that what they were? The like,
yeah,
weird. I kind of, for
reptiles thingies,
yes, for anyone who has played Tears of the Kingdom, I imagine the Aracudas, that's what I was picturing, but you were actually unable to see them somehow. They were like invisible dragons, kind of thing. I don't know, anyway, but like, he wasn't. thrilled that she was putting herself in danger, but also who would be in that instance, you know? But he just, he never stifled her, which I think I really appreciated.
Slivik. S-L-Y-V-I-K. Yeah.
Okay. Slivik's. I have no idea.
They felt like two arms of the same body.
Yes.
Yeah. In the sense that if I'm fighting, I'm going to protect one arm to keep it safe.
Right.
If I have a muscle spasm or whatever. And same with the other way. It wasn't a hierarchy.
Right.
It was fighting back to back. And I liked the every time they would be about to move forward in a battle. And he would be like, how many are there? She'd be like, too many. And then he'd be like, too many for us? And she'd be like, no, not for us.
So cute.
I appreciated that I became their little thing.
Yeah, I did too. I really liked that. When he said, you're lucky I have a soft spot for caged birds. Excuse me? And then when he said, you make me ravenous.
Uh-huh.
I think I had to pause the book and just I dry out.
Oh, I will say that's one complaint that I have is we did not get enough blood sharing in this particular book.
Uh-huh.
Did not get enough. The scene where she comes up on him feasting on a deer and he's covered in blood.
He's like,
you need to leave. I don't want to.
Right now.
I am.
You feast on me.
Perfectly happy right here. Thank you so much.
You can continue.
Would you like something fresher?
Uh-huh. I also, I don't know if you got this vibe too. This is one of my favorite relationship tropes between a side character and a main character. But her relationship with Arrakis at the very beginning reminded me a lot of the dynamic between and Bride, between the female main character. And I think his name was Alex or something.
Uh-huh.
He was kind of scared of her the whole time.
Interesting.
And, you know, where she could see his what he was doing and it kind of spooked him out a little bit. And I just thought, Arrakis is definitely a little bit more of the warrior type than the computer engineering type, but I kind of like that fun banter dynamic between the two of them.
Unfortunately, my brain went the opposite direction, and I am just now processing this for the first time because I don't think I connected it, but I think I pictured a little bit more of Game of Thrones, Arya and the Hound.
Oh.
Annoying the shit out of each other.
Oh, interesting.
The Hound is there to, keeps her safe, but, hates that he's there keeping her safe. Arya wants to be a rebellious little punk, and I don't think that's...
Right.
...consistent the entire way through.
Right.
But I think the initial impression...
Definitely.
...of him coming to take her away from the motel room...
Right.
...and then her having to play captive...
Yes.
I think as the story progresses, it definitely becomes much more of a, we're both skilled warriors.
Banter.
There's some equitability to it. Yes, there's banter. Especially after he loses his family.
That was sad.
Dude.
I was not ready for that.
No. I was not either. Especially not it. That triggered the soundtrack of Gladiator in my head.
A little too much.
A little
walking
too hard.
Walking through the wheat fields. Yeah.
Yes, that's the one.
Yep.
With Russell Crowe's spit on her toes. Yeah. That's what that triggered in me. Which was not great.
No.
But anyways, my dynamic with them was fun, but a little bit more
interesting.
Yeah, gritty,
that's a different vibe. Yeah. We went in very opposite directions. I think it was more the, what she was able, so the way that, is his name Alex in Bride?
Yeah.
The way that Alex was very didn't know what to believe regarding Misery's vampirism. in kind of like the unfounded, same thing here with yes. like her ability to see and the threads and everything, and kind of like how she would call him out for what he was doing and he thought for he sure. was doing it behind her back kind of thing. That aspect of the dynamic felt similar, but I can see where you're going with the Hound and 100%. Just a little different from what...
A little different.
No, I was not ready for his character development. That I was not ready for his trauma to come into the story. Like, dang. So I would love to have a book on him, though. Like, even if it's a straight-up villain origin story.
I don't know if he's ready for it.
Oh, I'm not saying necessarily a romance, just, okay. you know, it can be whatever he wants it to be, or yeah. nothing at all. Yes. Yeah. Oh, man. When he said, if you're one of mine, the Arcasian, I don't know, won't touch you. It was the mine. Just that.
Yeah.
I do have a question. At the end, with Nyaxia, who, petty.
Ugh. Yeah, she's a little bit of a bitch.
Was Atreus's curse the only one that was removed? And was his curse set different from the Bloodborne curse?
Yes.
Okay, so does he still have the Bloodborne curse? Or does yes. he, like... Okay,
the house, I was very confused by that. The house... have like a generic curse, I think.
Okay. Like a genetic.
Yeah, like something that's yeah. that to me is not a, it does not have a physical manifestation in their bodies. It's simply part of them.
Gotcha.
His curse was specific to him and it was a physical entity, like venom. Almost like yeah. living inside my interpretation of it, living inside and consuming him. So the curse that was removed was that one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. That makes sense because I think I again, audiobook, so chance I missed stuff. I think I was like, oh, she's taken away all the curses. And then at the very end, she was like, and now that Atreus's curse has been removed, but we still have people dealing with the blood. And I was like, oh, so was his the only one removed? But everyone else has, the- like, anyway. So that makes sense. So he's still going to die young. It's basically, like, what we've learned.
I don't even remember what the Bloodborne curse is.
Isn't it that they, like, kind of dissolve into insanity?
And
then they die familiar. Young?
Yeah, young, don't really young in a relative term for vampires.
Right. I mean, he's still like 500 years old. Let's call it what it is. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's 25. I liked that she was older. Right.
I'm sure once she's old and decrepit, he'll be like, what's the point anyways? You know? I appreciated this in Serpent in the Wings of Night, and I appreciate it in this story, that the gods are characters.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy when books have deities, and I use that word very lightly because I'm not referencing JLA in this particular instance. Deities that exist and have parameters and have mm-hmm. roles and powers, and they abide by their set of rules.
Yeah.
And I like the way that Carissa incorporates them, makes them a genuine part of the world building and a genuine part of the history and the lore. But then also makes them a part of the action, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that there is this very clear hierarchy among them. There's this very clear, like, who belongs to who serves who, what powers come from what places. Mm-hmm. It just makes, to me, it fleshes out almost that fourth dimension of things a little bit more. And it mm-hmm. makes it, again, easier to obtain in a standalone circumstance.
Yeah. No, I wholeheartedly agree. The amount of time that they were on page felt right.
Yes. It feels like it is very clearly defined building blocks for however the whole overarching world is gonna come together and end. And right. I really like the intentionality behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I am not, like with JLA, like I'm not feeling like things are just gonna spin out of control and we're not gonna be able to keep track of things and right. I'm not gonna know who's who and who does what. Each block lives in and of itself. Each deity lives within and of itself. And I can see how we're going to build the house by the end of the project. And I...
Right.
It makes me more connected as a long-term reader.
Right. Do you know how long the Crowns of Nyaxia series is supposed to be?
My understanding is that it's... And this may be very ill-informed. I don't know, I don't remember what my source is for this, but my understanding was that it was going to be three duologies.
Okay. I can't remember if that's just what we wanted, what we were hoping for, or if that was, like, actually what it was going to be. I'm going to go to her Instagram.
And I'm also, I'm sure things have now potentially changed since she has been picked up by her publishing house.
Right. Oh, here we go. The Crowns of Nyaxia series will be 6 books total, broken up into 3 duologies. The Nightborn duet, which follows the House of Night, the Shadowborn duet, which follows the House of Shadow, and the Bloodborn duet, which follows the House of Blood. So you're right.
So this one and Six Scorched Roses are extra.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. So it'll potentially be 8 total books.
I personally really, really like that. So, my mind, that means that Araya and Rain's story is kind of concluded in The Ashes and the Star. Like, they'll probably still play a part in the rest of the series, or maybe they might not, I don't know. But, like, that makes me want to finish The Ashes and the Star Curse King more. There was one thing about it that, like, is not one of my favorite tropes. It's so funny because you love it and you were eating it up. And just the way, like, if someone said that to me, I would literally be so mad. And so I was getting mad on Araya's behalf. But, like, she didn't care about it, you know? So, like, I need to not care. But that does make me want to, like, finish the book more.
Yeah. I think I may save it until the next one comes out.
I think that's a good idea.
So that I read it closer together. I stopped reading Ashes in the Star Curse because it was triggering my anxiety. I was at a point, I don't remember what I was reading when I originally picked it up, but I had read multiple books that were triggering that sense of, like, I can't turn the page because I don't want the bad thing to happen. Like, we're happy now.
Right, they were, like, happy.
To close the book.
Yeah.
And that, I got the little hint of it in this one, and that's why I had to text you and be like, hey, tell me they're happy. Please and thank you. I'm medicated now, so hopefully that will improve my ability to read those types of books.
I thought you said dedicated at first. No. Nope. I was like, oh, nope, medicated. okay, so the overarching plot of this book, because, like, while we could talk plot points, I just don't think there are very many that, like, we're going to get into much detail with. Basically, okay, I also have to say that one of my favorite tropes is kind of like the assassin priestess trope.
Oh.
So you see it in, hold on, I'm trying to find them on my shelves. Oh, Grave Mercy by Robin Lefevers, set in 1400s France, but they are priestesses of death, and they're assassins, and it's pretty cool. No, I wouldn't consider it, like, as epic fantasy as this one. The other one, oh my goodness, where would it even be on my shelves? Hold on. Vespertine by Maggie Rogerson. Margaret Rogerson? Margaret Rogerson. And she ends up kind of being, sharing her body with a spirit. I don't want to say, like, possessed, because it's not quite like that. But anyway, I think it's a really fun trope. So, she is basically an assassin priestess, and she has a really unique way of being able to see the world with threads and their magic and kind of being able to jump between the threads. I liked that aspect a lot. Thought it was really cool. And Atreus is a vampire and a conqueror, hence the name, and comes in, kind of takes over their lands, and she gets sent on a mission to infiltrate and become his new seer. So she gets rid of the previous seer and takes their place. And basically they just kind of like go battle to battle as he's like conquering the lands, but she's realizing he's a really nice conqueror.
Yeah.
So it's like not that serious.
Yeah.
And they end up going to like her hometown. And I liked that one of her like her character development aspects was she was never able to fully leave her past life behind her. And it was because she was older when she joined like the priestesshood. So she like had a family and she did know what it was like to have someone come in and conquer and take over. And she ends up seeing her brother and trying to help him. I liked the way that they infiltrated that city. I thought that one, I thought that was a cool little play out. And then they decide to like go try and take down the king. And when they get there, they find out that the king has basically been a literal meat puppet. And sorry, that was really gross. How else would you describe? Sorry.
No, you described it's the fact that you described it accurately that triggered the gag reflex a little
My bad. And that it was her sight mother who was actually the tyrant who was basically keeping the wrong people in power and you know, hurting good people. And that was another aspect of like what she was never able to like fully get rid of is like her compassion and her like need for justice. Mm-hmm. Instead of just doing kind of the, well, whatever the sight mother needs, even if it feels like it is morally wrong kind of like aspect to things. And so, yeah, then basically they get caught and she's like, but what if we sacrifice Atreus to our goddess? And then she's like, plot twist, we're sacrificing you, sight mother. And Atreus is able to get rid of his curse, and then they quite literally take over. they become the conquerors and
better than a meat puppet.
Still some quite, but I mean, it's fantasy.
right. We're working on
your fam.
Yes. Not representative of Allie and Jacqueline's true beliefs.
No.
I do think that the drug aspect of things was really important. This mm-hmm. idea that they have been using the Pythora seed to create an addicted society, create addicted soldiers. Because that leverages a significant amount of compassion towards liberators is such a, I use that word so loosely because they're liberating them to conquer them. So like not saying they're the good guys, but the intent of removing that.
Yes.
Stronghold over the communities, over different cities, removing the lords that are abusing them, that type of thing. So I definitely, and I appreciate that Atreus is very intentional about bringing in Selena as a representative for them. So mm-hmm. it is not intended to be a, I am in charge now, here's my rule, here's how it works.
Right.
It's you have a seat at this table, let's set up systems and resources and needs being met so that you can maintain that seat at the table type of thing. Conquering is wrong, but I didn't hate it in this book.
Right. I have to be honest, one aspect that I think, like, it wasn't ever one of those, like, conscious, like, I think that this is what's going to happen, or I hope that this is what's going to happen, but I think it was kind of like an under... vocalized or non-vocalized thought of just kind of like, well, technically Nyaxia just asked him to conquer, but like he doesn't actually want to rule anything. Like he's not saying he like what, but then like he does. So I think I don't know. There may have been kind of like, oh, I wonder if he's just gonna set someone else up who's good, and then he's gonna be like, deuces, I'm out of here. I fulfilled my promise, kind of thing. But like then that didn't happen. He's like, nope, it's my home now.
Well, so, and like, you know, you don't get much of that because eventually you come to the understanding that he didn't always anticipate getting that far. Like, I think there was a significant portion of it where he either anticipated, especially after the hidden island of his citizens was destroyed, there's definitely the sense of, I'm out of time, I'm out of resources, I'm not going to make it to the finish line, so it's going to be a like, why would I worry about ruling over these people when I'm not going to make it that far type of thing. So, never really sure that he intended to make it that entire way. And we may, in future books, we may see that he has stepped away and set up a council, set up a parliament, or something where it's representatives of the different state. We don't know yet. That might be wishful thinking, but...
I mean, again, I didn't hate it. The fact that he was, like, a little bit shy showing his room and being like, well, it could be ours. Do you like it? And she's like, let's kiss. And he's like, but will you, like, look at the room first? He's like, I haven't had a room of my own in so long. I'm like, a place to say. I was like, okay, that was kind of cute.
I really loved the tortured sad boy, my prince has been killed. I'm glad that we introduced that very quickly.
Yeah.
Because it immediately made me fall in love with him. I'm like, oh yeah. Vengeful. Sad because his prince is dead. This is who Kael Westfall should be.
I just rolled my eyes so hard it gave me a headache.
The parallels between...
The parallels are there. Atreus is far superior.
Far superior.
I think it's just, this is everything that Kael could have been.
Yes. Also, Kael did not go conquer.
No, he did not. Thankfully. What were they? If he had... Where did they live?
That would have been horrendous. Can you imagine?
That would have been not good. If you're just looking for something quick and fun and like...
Yeah.
But like it'll... You'll still not like, spicy, like it. And
but like in enough there. Romance and enough... Yeah. And you're just...
Yeah.
You're hooked.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Had a grand old time.
It's good. Yeah. I will say this about the audiobook. And again, this is not the audiobook narrator's fault. I want to say, like, justice for this audiobook narrator. The voicing for not Nyaxia, but the other goddess, the Acacia, something like that. It literally says in the book that her voice sounds both, like, of many voices and one, and a child and a crone, like, all at the same time. Listening to, and again, not the audiobook narrator's fault. She literally did what the prompt said to do. It threw me off because the voice would change with every word, and it would change, like, it would sound like a child, and then it would sound like an old person, and then it would be really low, and then it would be really high, and then it would be really quiet, and then it would be really loud. And I just, like, almost couldn't focus on what was being said because I was... so thrown off by the, but also that's probably very accurate to what the characters were hearing. So like if you are going to listen to the audiobook, be prepared that that might throw you off too. But the audiobook narrator did a wonderful job. Justice for them. This is not me criticizing them. I just was not personally prepared.
It's a difficult task.
Yeah. I would not be able to do that very well. Right. So I have a lot of respect for audiobook narrators. So. But I think that's it. It's a great book. Go read it. Go us. Well, With that, that is the end of this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We would love to hear your thoughts on Slaying the Vampire Conqueror by Carissa Broadbent. So please check us out over on Instagram at the Bibliovert Podcast. Please come slide into our DMs. We would love to chat with you. We also have a YouTube channel called The Bibliovert where we do bullet journal videos and challenges and just talk about books. And it's a lot of fun. I also talk about fanfic a little bit over there. So if you are into the fanfic world or curious about trying it out, I do have a couple of videos of recommendations. And we also have a Patreon that is truly so much fun. Allie and I are planning our 2024 Bibliovert meetup right now, and it has just, it's going to be so good. Allie found a potential tattoo artist, and oh, it just looks so good. So if you have been looking for a bookish community, or you've been curious about our meetups and things like that, you can definitely go check it out on Patreon. We'd love to have you come join our family. It's a whole lot of fun. We do book buddy reads and a chat to talk about the book. We also have just a Discord chat that is so much fun, filled with incredible people, and they're wonderful and make the space so special and great. So we would love to have you come join it. But we hope you have a fantastic day, happy reading, and we will see you next time.